Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Sticks in the Six podcast. Here are your co-hosts, Andrew Forbes, Peter Barachini, and Alex Hopson.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 147 of the Sticks in the Six podcast. Don't be intimidated that you're hearing my voice and not Andrew's right now. He's okay. Everything's fine with him. He got called into work last minute, so unfortunately, he's not able to be here with us tonight. But it's okay because Peter Barachini, my co-host, and I, of course, Alex Hobson, are here to carry the load tonight. So Peter, as Andrew always does, we're going to kick things off by catching up. How you doing?
Yeah, doing good, man. Doing good. Yeah, it doesn't feel like the, you know, dynamic trio with one of us aren't here. But you know what? Everything's going good right now. Good news. I know last week I mentioned that had issues with my washing machine for dishes and actual washer for clothing. Good news. One out of the two are done. And it's only taken like 3 weeks to get to one and probably going on four for the other. But things are slowly moving along, and we are having essential, machines in my house very shortly. But aside from that and just, you know, yelling at people on the phone, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty well as well. I had some kick-ass Thai food tonight, which is settling in pretty nicely. I was there's this place kind of down the street from me that I have been quickly accustoming myself as a regular to since I moved here. I think I've probably ordered this place like 5 or 6 times in the 2 months I've been here. But you know, I'm a big Thai food guy, and that's all I really have to say. There's not much else to add. I had a pretty quiet week since the last time we recorded. It's just been doing a lot of work, and I don't think anyone wants to hear me ramble about work. So we've got some more interesting things to ramble about, whether Andrew is here or not. And we're going to kick things off with a rare instance of Sticks in the Six breaking news. And I say rare. Sticks in the Six breaking news, but it's not really, like, I say that as if we're the ones that are getting credit for breaking the news, but we're not. I just read a tweet on my phone 5 minutes ago, and I figure it's probably a good time to talk about it. Elliot Friedman, as of 7:30 p.m. time of this recording is January 31st, 7:38 p.m. So we're right on this. Just tweets out saying there is word tonight that talks between the Vancouver Canucks and the Calgary Flames are intensifying around Elias Lindholm. We will see where it goes. So Peter, Vancouver and Calgary are both teams that have kind of been mentioned in the stratosphere around the Leafs. And you can tell that I'm totally reaching here to try and make it Leafs related so we can talk about it. But I don't think Elias Lindholm was ever really tied to the Leafs as a serious trade target, but there have been talks about Tanev and there have been talks about Zadorov. And we just saw there's some potential rumblings about Zadorov maybe being a cap casualty in Vancouver. It's a bit of an odd situation over there, but I guess since these are two teams that have been mentioned around the Leafs, let's get an instant reaction from you to the trade rumors here.
Yeah, it obviously big news, big shock right now because it was just coming out of nowhere. And yeah, it's kind of weird how Zadorov may be a cap casualty considering that they acquired him, you know, in November, December around then. And then all of a sudden now he's probably on the move as well. And it's like, well, if you were going after Zadorov and you really want Lindholm, want a Gustav Lindholm, right? But you know what? It made sense at the time for Vancouver. They had the cap space, but now they don't. But now if they want Lindholm, they got to create said cap space again. And it's really interesting to see because, let's face it, right now they got some decent prospects in their system and maybe even some roster players too that they could dangle over or give to the Calgary Flames as well. I know I'm not sure if he's going to be available, but we talked about how maybe Connor Garland wasn't as happy in Vancouver, but he's more of a wing, right? You want more of that center depth behind Pettersson, and you know, Pia Suter right now is probably going to be your second or your second third line, but that's going to bump everything down where you have Pettersson, Lindholm, Suter, toss up between maybe Dakota Joshua, Sam Lafferty as that third or fourth line, those third or fourth line kind of guys. But interesting to see how this is going to play out and what prospects are going to be offered too, because if I'm Calgary, you know, they got some names on there that are very, very appealing that, you know, they could ask for if they want to pay up. And, you know, Vancouver's in that win now mode right now, which nobody thought at the beginning of the season, but this is one of those moves that they need to make a tough decision on.
Yeah. And, you know, it seems kind of weird because ever since Craig Conroy took over as GM, it's almost like there's been a force above him saying the only team that you can trade for is Vancouver, because you wouldn't think that two teams that are in the same division, and I guess they're not really competing right now because Calgary's not as close to a nice playoff run as the Canucks are, but still it's weird to see two teams that are in the division and supposedly rivals start trading with each other so frequently. So it is a weird situation though. Like the Zadorov thing kind of caught me off guard because I read an article a couple days ago, at the Hockey News, shout out to, I'm going to butcher his last name, Adam Kierzenblatt. I want to say he's at the Hockey News right now, former co-worker of ours at the Hockey Writers. Yes. He did an interview with Nikita Zadorov about a week ago, I want to say it was. And it sounded like things were going great there. You know, Zadorov was talking about how, you know, no one's going to push him around on home ice. There's an element of team toughness in the room. But then there's these rumors coming out of nowhere. They're not coming from just nowhere. I mean, Elliot Friedman talked about it. Jason Brow talked about it for Sportsnet 650. Don Taylor on Donnie and Dollywall. They all mentioned something to the effect of, there's kind of a sense that maybe he hasn't fit in the room right there. And, there's a sense that you know, they might have to clear cap room, and they mentioned him, and obviously Andrei Kuzmenko's kind of been receiving some headlines there as well. But yeah, it's a weird situation. And, either way, I think that if they add Lindholm, the Canucks, I mean, I think that they're capitalizing on their opportunity of currently being first seeded in the league, which I don't think anybody was expecting, but they're having an amazing season so far. And
Hold that thought. Sorry, I need to get to it right now. Kevin Weeks posted a video of his random spots, and Andrei Kuzmenko could be one of those names involved.
Ooh, Kuzmenko to the Flames.
A lot of people are saying Kuzmenko. No, David Quadrelli, Rick Dollywall, they're all saying Andrei Kuzmenko is involved, and there's kind of talks about how maybe he wasn't happy or they weren't happy with his performance as well. So,
okay.
Making sense right now. Well, pieces are falling into place.
Maybe we should, Quadrelli, the insider. Okay, let's go. That's huge. All right. Well, sorry. That's you. If anyone's listening right now, you're getting an organic Sticks in the Six reaction to this because it's happening in real time. So, all right. Well, we'll keep tabs on that and see what happens.
Love it when stuff like this happens, because the last time this happened, it was a Taylor Hall trade to Boston, and this was before he even joined on. It was like very early ages of Sticks in the Six, and we were getting those updates at trade deadline, and me and Forbes are just like, "What is going on right now?" Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, it's weird to see this stuff kind of break in real time and react to it. But you know what? That's what we're here to do. We pick and choose to record at certain times, and sometimes this stuff's going to fall into place. So here we are. Obviously, there's more breaking news that's on a little more of a dark note. And, you know, this story we've been following ever since it kind of re-entered the media stratosphere a year and a bit ago. But last week when we talked about it, we didn't have any confirmed details yet. We were just sort of talking about how there were certain players that have been given leaves, but it was confirmed just over the last week that five players, Alex Formanton, Dylan Dubé,
Carter Hart, Michael McLeod, and Cal Foote.
Yes. So I just had one of those train train got stalled in the brain and just never kept going. But yeah, those five players have been told to surrender to police. They're all having statements come out with their lawyers and talking about Carter Hart's lawyers flat out called it a false allegation, which is a bit of a choice to say. You're seeing some of the words and some of the slimy wording used by these lawyers. Mikey McLeod's lawyer made a point to mention that it was 5 years after the fact, which just right off the bat seems doesn't like they're matter. Trying to diminish the victim's story. But either way, Peter, initial reactions to this?
Based on the names that, you know, the timing of everything seemed kind of off and they were given the leaves anyways, right? And now everything's falling into place. And now this is in the hands of the court. You know, the victim involved in all this and her representatives and everything like that, they wouldn't have had enough information if they weren't going through with this, with the whole, you know, charges, laying everything out and going to court. This is very substantial. We knew all the events that happened. We knew the detail that was in it from right when it happened, when Rick Westhead and a bunch of other reporters were breaking this whole entire story. I believe it was also Katie Strang and others that have been following the story closely, where, you know, this is very disturbing. It's graphic and it's very horrific. And now that, you know, this is the time where, you know, we got a sense now. And now it's going to go to trial. We're not going to hear more much about this because I think they want to keep everything tight-lipped on both sides and everything like that until we actually hear a verdict, which won't be for, I believe they're looking at maybe a year and a half, 2 years as like the start date for that. But, you know, this is one of those instances where, you know, this is more than about hockey right now. This is about someone's life who is literally destroyed by this whole entire incident, and now we're getting more details and everything about that. I know we talked about it extensively last week. I don't want to go too on and on right now because now it's just the process of them going in, surrendering to the police and everything like that. But, you know, it's like we said last week, it's now time, like, it's now not the time. We should always believe, you know, victims and survivors of everything that's happened. This is one of those instances where believe their story because it matters and it's important, and you shouldn't diminish the fact that, you know, oh, a hockey player's life is going to be ruined. Who cares about that at this point, right? So that's just where I'm at right now. Now it's in the hands of the courts. Believe survivors. That's all I got to say at this point.
You know, one thing that I do think needs to be mentioned as well is someone in Calgary's got to answer for that statement comparing Dylan Dubé's what he was taking a leave for to mental health and saying it was some mental health reasons. And
they did release something 5 hours or so hours later that they had no awareness of that.
So my initial reaction to this was, why would the Flames paint this as a mental health thing when Dubé was clearly, when it was clearly for something much more morbid and not involving mental health?
That's a big question.
And you know what, when the Flames come out here and say, you know, when they say we didn't know about this, he didn't tell us about this, this is something that we are completely in the dark on, it's one of those things where it's either A, how did you not know about it? If you're being serious, how was there no connection made there? How was there no rumblings? How, like, unless you just took what this guy said at face value and tried to do immediate damage control afterwards, once it was reported a couple days after that players were told to surrender to police. And then the other option is, you know, if Dubé lied to them and they didn't know about it, if Dubé lied to them, what does that say about the state of the organization right now? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like it's either they covered it up and they're lying about saying that they had no idea about anything, or they're ignorant to it, which doesn't make sense. It's not a good look either way. So some questions I think have to be answered in Calgary for the way that was handled. And
the exact quote was, "We had no knowledge of pending charges at the time Dylan's request for a leave of absence was granted."
What that sounds like is he lied to them and said it was mental health related, but I don't know. I still feel it's really weird that no one in that organization had any idea of that. I feel like if you're about to be arrested, if you're about to be called to get arrested and called to told to surrender yourself to police, I feel like it's just, I feel like someone in the organization's got to know about that, right? I don't know. That's just one of those things that I think is a bit of a tough question to answer, yeah, and a bit of a weird one. But one thing I'll close
right now, with, we just got to wait everything out at this point now. Like, obviously, like, the Flames sent a statement out, but now it's in the hands of, like I mentioned before, everything's in the hands of the courts right now. Yep. We got to wait for that date. We got to hear everything, the whole entire process for that. So, yeah, it was just, again, we said it before, we said it again, it was only a matter of time before everything went through, and now we're getting further along in the whole entire process.
Yeah. One thing that I'll leave this with is a quote from the Oak Leafs on Twitter, who is always a phenomenal soundbite. If you can, if you can call Twitter users tweets soundbites, then this is one of the good ones. Lots of expletives in here. Or expletives, geez, I stumbled over that. Lots of expletives in here, so I'm going to read a clean version of it, but I think the overall point of this thread here is really nailed on the head. He goes, taking bullets for voting age athletes who would in any capacity gather eight at a time and bully or take advantage of a lone girl in a hotel room screams way louder about the type of man you are and what behavior you condone from your own son than any attempt to sound rational. And then he goes on to say, you can try and spin all the cancel culture hate into this shit as you want, but the fundamental difference is between behaving like a decent human being or being a predatory D-bag is still pretty binary, regardless of whatever judiciary loopholes any lawyer can or cannot exploit. I had a tough time getting through that paragraph with skipping all the swear words, but you get the point.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, so many people, and it's obviously it's a little different this time around because police are involved and they're being told to arrest. So it's not like your standard allegation in sports, but in any time there's some sort of sexual assault allegation in sports, whether it's a low level player or whether it's someone on the status of Roberto Alomar or something like that, there's always people who like to play lawyer and try to be the devil's advocate and try to play lawyer on Twitter, say innocent till proven guilty. You never know. And I saw a tweet the other day that really sum this up perfectly. Okay, innocent until proven guilty, for sure. But by that same logic, are you automatically calling the girl guilty of lying? Like, is that how we're going to play it too? Or is you say innocent until proven guilty when it comes to the people who are being accused, but in that same breath, you're accusing the girl of lying and you're saying that she is lying until further. Like, it's a very backwards logic.
Yeah.
And I thought that Oak summed it up really nicely there. So, yeah, great follow.
I was even reading what Rick Westhead's thing too. Like, obviously he does a fantastic job with laying everything out. If you're still new to the whole entire thing or the events that have been unraveled, again, yeah, the police told him to surrender based on the allegations that were presented to them. And again, he says nothing's been proven, but now hopefully when this case does get into the courts, then again, there will be much more clarity a year and a half, 2 years from now, how long this the whole entire process will go, because we all know how long cases can go before the courts and everything like that. So
on to a different note here, Adam Fantilli, you're gonna have to kind of take the lead on this here, Peter, because I actually haven't seen the video yet. I'm glad I haven't, and I don't know what happened on the play, but a calf laceration. I mean, we've talked a lot about injuries and worse involving skate blades in the past couple of months. And it sounds like Fantilli, I actually saw a tweet from Chris Johnson saying that he was wearing a specific type of sock that likely saved his career and, you know, saved him from what could have been a lot worse than just going out with a laceration. But Peter, what do you have to say about Adam Fantilli?
Yeah. So it happened during their game on Sunday when they lost to the Seattle Kraken. And you notice that something happened with Fantilli where his, like, he was sort of limping and everything like that. You knew something happened with his leg. Obviously, we didn't know fully what until the news came out today. Out 6 to 8 weeks right now, fourth among NHL rookies in 27 points. It just seems like, obviously, it's a tough break for him, tough break for the team. Like, you just hope that he gets better and he's very, you know, he gets on the path to being healthy for next season. Or he may return towards the end of the season. I don't know, but most likely for next season. But at the same time, it's just like, man, the rookie race is taking a big hit with Bedard and his broken jaw. Leo Carlson's had his injury. Adam Fantilli now with his laceration. it just sucks because this was a promising group and everyone was so enamored with this rookie class in the race for the Calder. And now all of a sudden you have three big names gone as a result of injury. And, you know, I saw a couple of tweets there. I think probably going to have to go through them, but like there are a lot of people saying, you know, bubble wrap the rookies, make sure everyone's safe and everything like that. But, you know, like you said, like at least he was wearing some protective gear and it probably could have been a lot more severe than it already is. And tough news to hear. Glad that, you know, it wasn't as severe as it is, but hopefully, you know, Fantilli's going to be on the path or have a quick recovery as well, because the Blue Jackets, they're decimated with injuries right now too. I mean, Patrick Laine, he had an injury and then he went on players assistance program. So it just seems like the injuries and the bad luck is piling on the Blue Jackets at this point.
Yeah, it's a tough scene for sure. And that's the worst part about this is you have all these injuries to young players that pile up and it really takes away from the entertainment value when it comes to the Calder show, the Calder race. So, yeah, it's a tough scene for sure. And, all the best, Adam Fantilli, and hope that he is able to recover soon and swiftly. And, ideally, I'm going to sound really stupid for asking this. Probably not much of a chance he comes back this year, is there?
Because of timeline, it was around 6 to 8 weeks. It may seem like beginning, or I'm pinning it on the fact that because we're already, you know, going into February right now, there's probably already 4 weeks gone, probably another four in March. Actually, I'm just going to pull up my calendar very quickly. Yeah, you're probably looking at maybe end of March, beginning of April. So the thing is, with Bedard, he suffered his injury about a month or so ago, and that really put his future in doubt or timeline, but he may return a little bit earlier. But this one happened a little bit later on, so his timeline or return may be a little bit more in jeopardy than Bedard's.
Fair enough. Well, ideally he makes it back at some point this season and gets to salvage somewhat of this year, even if the Jackets aren't going to the playoffs at all. You hate to see injuries pile up on the rookies like that. But yeah. Peter, I think it's time we move over to some Maple Leafs talk. And right now, you know, obviously the Leafs are just, I mean, there's a couple NHL games tonight, but we're more or less into the All-Star break. Peter, let's get some thoughts on the Leafs right now, just as a whole. Fourth in the Atlantic Division, which I don't think is much of an ideal spot considering where they were last year and considering where they have been in the past. Not precisely where the team would want to be right now, but on the other hand, it is a very tight race. Tampa's only 1 point ahead of them, and they have 3 games in hand. Detroit's 1 point behind them, and they have 2 games in hand. So, and then after the Leafs and the Red Wings, there's a big drop off in the Atlantic Division down to the Buffalo Sabres at 48. So, Peter, what are your thoughts on the Leafs right now? 25-14-8 at the All-Star break, 47 games under their belts. I suck at math on the spot. What would that be? 35 games remaining? Yes, 35 games.
Yeah.
Math on the spot. I'm good.
Yeah, no, I could totally relate how I'm not good with math on the spot. That's why I never did so well. And that's why I write words instead of doing stuff with numbers. Yeah, I mean, when you look at the surface, you know, 617 points percentage, you would think, you know, it's pretty decent. You know, they do have 3 games in hand on Tampa, 2 on Boston and Florida, which could vault them a little bit further up. 58 points. Goal differential, maybe you'd like to see a little bit higher, but that's where it gets a little bit dicey. You know, they have 166 goals for, they're scoring goals, but man, the goals against, the defensive play, that's been the biggest issue. And you saw that in those games where they went on, you know, the four game losing streak where they blew those leads. And that's when you started to question, you know, what are you going to do with this team? There are a lot more holes to fix than previously thought. And we knew that going into the season, but right now things are starting to take a little bit of a turn in the right direction. So hopefully they build off that, but you're already questioning if Sheldon Keefe is the guy for the job. What was Brad Treliving doing in the offseason? Why aren't they performing, or his acquisitions performing as well, or the major ones for that matter? So if there's one thing I would say about this team, it's consistently inconsistent. I said it quite a bit. They're relying too heavily. I mean, well, Matthews is just an absolute beast at this point right now, but at one point is Auston Matthews going to be the answer every single game? You need everybody to step up, everyone to do their part, and they're looking like that right now. In the last three games that they played, they've been very, very strong defensively, helping Sammy out. And that's the type of play that you want to see the Maple Leafs have, especially with a struggling goaltender that really had nothing to go with. And those two games against the Winnipeg Jets were absolutely fantastic. That's the type of play that you want to see against premier teams or against even lesser known team, not lesser known teams, but teams lower than them in the standings and take advantage of that. I mean, when the chances and shots were close in the first game, 32-30 for Winnipeg, and then Matthews with the game winning goal. And then after that, you know, Toronto outshot Winnipeg. They were the better team for most of that game, and Connor Hellebuck was in net. So it seems like you really don't know what to expect with this team game in, game out. You got to go in with glass half empty, half full kind of thing. And hopefully that's something that changes in the second half, or already in the second half, but at post All-Star break, where maybe they can get it together and they could go on a bit more of a run and be more consistent.
Yeah, I it's weird because part of me wants to compare this season to the 2019-20 season, because I think that team and this team have some similarities. I think that, you know, just like we are right now, back in 2019-2020, we were talking about the Leafs not really warranting going out and having a massive deadline and dropping a whole bunch of assets on rentals and loading up the team for the playoffs. And that's the case this year. We've been talking about them like that this year. And then there have been questions about their identity pop up this year, mostly in their bottom six. I think this year, I think back in 2019-20, I think that there were some identity questions, but I think that for the most part, it was just some awkward turnover after having Mike Babcock and having him kind of lose the room, and then Sheldon Keefe taking over midway through the year. I think it was just a very poorly timed season, a lot of things didn't fall into place when they should have. And I don't think it's quite that bad in that sense this year. I just think that they have more holes on the roster than we thought. You know, they signed John Klingberg in the offseason. No one expected him to be a good defenseman at his peak, what he could have been. You know, the Leafs are getting a guy who can rebound, put up between 40 and 50 points, and, you know, man power play one or even power play two. Obviously, that didn't work out. He's on the injured reserve now. They've had some positive spots like Simon Benoit pop up. I think that Bertuzzi and Domi, obviously, you'd want them to be, you know, a little further ahead of where they are right now at this point of the season. But I think there's just a lot of things where it's just certain guys are underperforming, and they just haven't really been able to make all the things click all at once. But on that, you know, you talked about those games against Winnipeg. I mean, those games show you that the Leafs are capable of being a great team this year. Want to be. It's just, you know, it hasn't been here on a consistent enough basis to justify going out and having a huge trade deadline like it looks like Vancouver's about to do. So that's okay. I mean, the Leafs, you know, they had their big deadline last year. It somewhat paid off for them. They did get out of the first round for the first time in forever, but I don't think anyone's expecting them to make a big move at the deadline like that this year. I think that, you know, there are some issues on the roster that need solving. Like I said, I think the bottom six needs a little more of an identity. I think you've got a decent third line, but not one you can trust for more than 10 minutes a game. And then you have sort of like a square peg in a round hole kind of checking line on the fourth line with David Kampf there and Noah Gregor. I think that they got to find a way to get a checking forward and make that third line into a checking line. And then just move some guys around and try and make it work. I don't think it's like 2019-20 in the sense that the dressing room's been lost and the team has no identity and has no idea where to go. But I do think that there are some identity issues that do need to be solved. I just don't think it's a team-wide issue like it was 2 years ago. But overall, not a great spot for them to be in right now, but there's also under half a season to go left. I think that, you know, teams get hot in the second half and Leafs can be one of those teams. I think they just have to start bringing it on a consistent basis. And I think that they need to start getting some more consistent good goaltending, because We saw what the Leafs are capable of when they don't have to worry about allowing four goals on the first 10 shots of the game, right? So moving on to our next point here. I guess we already kind of touched on this, but Peter, what would you say is the biggest issue to improve on as it stands right now?
Again, like you could literally pick anything. You could pick the goaltending. You could pick the defense. You can pick, you know, needing more from your bottom half of the roster. And it's interesting enough because I'm going to pick on the big I'm gonna pick on, like, you know, those players needing to step it up a little bit more. You know, the combination of, you know, Bertuzzi, Reeves, Domi looks like he's starting to pick it up a little bit more. Bertuzzi's just having rotten luck at this point. I mean, we saw that disallowed goal where Nylander was pushed in, and it seemed like, oh, that's like the monkey off Bertuzzi's back right there, right? And then all of a sudden that goal gets called back and he's back at square one where, you know, he hasn't scored in quite some time. It seems like he's getting his chances and his looks and it's just not working out. I mean, it sucks because he could literally have, with all the chances that he's had, he could easily have like another, you know, 10 or so goals. He could have like, you know, 30 points at this point. Instead, you know, he's back down at 20. You know, he's making good plays. It's just a matter of him trying to convert. And I think the biggest, I think I was just rambling on a little bit there, but one issue that I would like to see happen is seeing those players step it up a little bit more or be a little bit more consistent. I mean, that was Ryan Reeves' best game since the first two of the season. Like against Winnipeg Jets, where even he was mixing it up towards the end of the game. And it's like, you know, the Winnipeg Jets were turtling because Ryan Reeves is there and he's doing what Ryan Reeves is supposed to do. He had good hands on that goal. He needs to be disruptive on both ends of the ice. I think that's going to be big if they could get a little bit more contributions from the bottom of their roster, but specifically those players that they signed in the offseason.
Yeah, I think that's obviously something that's been a talking point all year. The core four is kind of taking on a little more weight than they probably should be. You know, I think everybody thought that going into this year, you know, the reason and the benefit for sacrificing defense, not just like defensemen, but defense in general, Justin Hall, Alex Kerfoot, guys that eat up time on the penalty kill. The trade-off for that was always going to be bringing in some more dynamic offensive players. And Bertuzzi and Domi were supposed to be those players, and it hasn't happened that way. That way yet. So you hope that they find their game at some point. I do agree. Bertuzzi's having a really rough go luck-wise. I don't think he's necessarily playing bad. It's just, you know, when you're that snake-bitten, and even he should have scored on Saturday against Winnipeg, but they disallowed his goal for the most egregious goalie interference penalty I've ever seen. But don't get us started on that. We'll ramble forever.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, it's hard to disagree. I think that I think the – honestly – I would just say that the biggest issue they need to improve on is goaltending. And I say that just because, like I said, you look at what this team is capable of doing when their goalie can give them 10 out of 10 saves to start the game and give them a chance to get settled in. And then, you know, we've seen the Leafs snap for four or five goals in a period before in half a game. They don't need to be scoring in the first couple of minutes to get ahead of the lead. They don't need to have that lead early on to win hockey games. They just need to have their guys out there and score goals. So, you know, the Leafs are a team that can score themselves out of issues, but you don't want them to be doing that on a regular basis. And so I think that where we're at right now, the biggest improvement that they can have is just consistent goaltending and not having to worry about their goalie allowing three or four goals to start a game and, you know, having to put themselves in that hole to dig themselves out of earlier. Cause like I said, you look at these past three games, Ilya Samsonov's played. He looks like he did when he was at his best last year.
Yeah.
What do you like? Look at what the Leafs have been able to do in those games. They've been winning hockey games. So honestly, good goaltending. If they get that on a more consistent basis, I think that that'll honestly help them more than improving any part of the roster will. But that's a question that we'll have to wait to be answered, because while the things kind of look good right now, you know, the Leafs and goaltending has always been an inconsistent conversation in the past. And so we'll see how the rest of the year plays out. I don't see him going for a goalie at the deadline, but onto a little brighter note with the team, Peter, MVP. There are a couple of contenders this year, a couple guys I can list off the top of my head that I think you might say, but I'll give the floor to you. Who is your MP? I almost said MP3.
MP3.
Who is your MVP? Who is your MVP on the year so far?
MVP.MP3. Yes. I mean, it's really coming down to two players right now. It would have been three. I think it would have been Justin Wall if he was a little bit healthier.
Joseph Wall.
Yeah. Wait, did I say Hall?
You said Justin Wall.
Justin Wall. Oh my God. It's okay. Oh, wow. Okay.
We were just talking about Justin Wall. It's okay.
Joseph Wall. Sorry. Yeah. If he was healthier and he was getting wins and being in the spot that he was, I think he would be up there, but as much as you want to give it to William Nylander, you got to give it to Austin Matthews at this point. Dude is literally clutch. He's on pace for 70 goals this year. You know, he's coming up at key moments. You know, obviously he can't score a hat trick every single game, but when the team needs him to be at his best, he is at his best. And what he's doing right now is phenomenal, and he's carrying this team on his back. And, you know, everyone's going to talk about, like, the differential between his goals and assists, and it's like, you know what? We've seen Matthews become a good playmaker in the past. I think the assists will come a little bit more, but when you're riding a hot hand, you're riding a hot hand, and he's going to be my MVP right now.
You know what? I'm going to go a little off the board for the MVP here.
Ooh.
And I'm going to really focus on the definition of most valuable player and not necessarily best player or most electrifying player on the year.
Oh, we're going into that discussion, eh?
I'm going to say, we're not going to get into that discussion. I don't want to sit here and talk about that. But, you know, just for the purpose of being different and not agreeing with you on both of those players, I'm going to say Morgan Riley. Because
good pick, yeah.
Where do you think this team would be if they had Morgan Riley from much of last season? Right?
Different spot.
Morgan Riley from November, December, January, February. I'm not just talking points. I'm talking about everything. Because he had his moments last year, and I will always be a Morgan Riley truther. I will always point back to the fact that when Morgan Riley's playing at his worst, there is usually a reason for it, and that reason is usually that he doesn't have a good defensive partner. Anytime you've seen Riley struggling in a big way, it's always been when there's been some sort of revolving door defensive partner. Last year, he went through a phase between injuries and just other things that were happening, mm-hmm. where he was either playing with Justin Hall one night or Jordy Benn the next night or Victor Mete the next night. Like it was a weird stretch. And, you know, Timothy Liljegren one night, it just, when you give him a revolving door of defensive partners that he can't really get comfortable with, he's going to start focusing too much on trying to cover his ass defensively. And that impacts his offensive game. And it's a bit of a domino effect. Morgan Riley's played alongside TJ Brody all year. And regardless of what you want to say about TJ Brody, Morgan Riley has been thriving playing alongside of him.
Yeah.
And if he wasn't doing what he's doing this year, where would this defensive core be? And like I said, not just talking offensively, he's been good defensively this year too. He's been playing on the penalty kill. His pairing has generally been one of the shutdown pairings for them on the year. It's kind of been split between that pairing and McCabe Benoit, but either way, you know, Morgan Riley, he's got the points. He's got the defensive game stepping up this year. I just think that if he was closer to what he was around a year ago this time, I don't know if the Leafs would even be in a playoff spot, to be honest. So
playoff Riley has emerged.
Playoff. Basically. Well, that's what I'm saying. And, yeah. You know, it hasn't been, you know, peak playoff Riley this year, but he's been on another level compared to what he has in the past. And like, at least compared to last season. So he's my kind of dark horse pick for MVP year, mm-hmm. but we're kind of moving towards the trade deadline. And Peter, do you know what comes before the trade deadline? A lot of things come before the trade deadline.
I was about to say
you specifically. If you had to pick one thing that'll come before the trade deadline?
All-Star game?
Close. I'm going into a different sport. The Super Bowl. The Super Bowl comes before the trade deadline. And if you're looking for a super offer for Super Bowl 58, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. New customers can bet on the big game and turn $5 into $200 instantly in bonus bets. I've read the wrong part there. Whoops. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code THPN. New customers can bet $5 to get $200 instantly in bonus bets only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 58 with the code THPN. The crowd is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. If you're in New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or you can visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 160 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/football for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Nailed it.
Thank you. I think I nailed it for the most part. I just tripped over my words because I started reading the part where it says mention available lines and odds from the DraftKings Sportsbook. It's is clearly a clearly something. It's a prompt asking me to do something, but I read it like it was part of the script. So aside from that, I think we did fine. But this brings us back. Sorry.
Little update on that. A little bit of news in regards to the Calgary-Vancouver trade per David Pagnotta. Kuzmenko is part of the deal, but Calgary's on his no trade list.
Oh, so
he's got to possibly. Uh-oh. We gotta figure that out at some point, or if it's gonna go through. Because if not, then it's gonna probably be picks or prospects.
Wow. All right.
And I can confirm that it is actually David Pagnotta, because a lot of time he didn't have that blue check mark and there were a lot of parody Pagnotta accounts. This is the real thing. So, okay.
Well, good. So Peter, obviously this is a trade that kind of happened close to the trade deadline, but not at the trade deadline, but let's talk about the deadline. I'm sure we'll touch on this more as we get closer to the date, but as of right now, one addition that you would like.
Ideally, I still think you should target a defense or maybe try and get somebody with term. You're looking at the bigger picture right now. You're not just getting a rental right now. As much as I would love to try and get a player that maybe you could possibly sign later on, or you know that's going to be a big factor, I think that's going to be the direction that you're going to go to, but it's very tough. If I was a pick, you know, or even if you were to buy, like, or buy low on free agents or pending free agents this season, I like Nick Seeler on Philadelphia. I think he brings that rough and rugged style play, but you know, can generate a bit of offense, not a whole lot, but the defensive game, the awareness, the physicality. I think that you have someone tough up front on the fourth line. If you have someone like him on the blue line as well to complement kind of like a Simon Benoit, but can still play solid defensively and be good in transition. I've liked this game for some time now. I think he's definitely an ideal target. Whether or not that actually happens or not. It's funny enough, I got a piece coming out because David Yurecek expressed frustrations. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I think the Maple Leafs should express interest in a top, you know, defender in Yurecek. Again, probably unlikely it's going to happen or get to a point of a trade. It just seems like, you know, they're on different terms or different, you know, wavelengths at this point. Why not give him a call?
I mean, I wouldn't be against that. Yurecek was one of my favorite defensemen from that draft, and I was a fan of him before he was selected by Columbus. And, you know, he was one of those guys where you watch him in the World Juniors and you pay attention to him throughout the year, and you're like, that is the exact kind of guy the Leafs need on their defensive core right now. But they weren't in a position to get him. So, you know, I'd be interested. I'd make that call and just at least see what's available, see, like, how much it would take to get him. So that'd be an interesting pick for sure. In terms of one addition that I'd make, I'm just going to take the boring answer. I'm just going to say Chris Tanev, man. Yeah. Like, you know, unless it's a situation, and I feel like this will end up being the case where the Leafs are involved in a bidding war for him, and there's obviously a little bit of a tax because Calgary used to have True Living in the office. You know, if it ends up being something where it's like they're asking for a first round pick and a prospect and a low level roster player or something like that, then yeah, you back off and you don't make that trade. But if there is a world where he can be acquired for a mid round pick and or a prospect, I think they should just take every opportunity they can to make that deal, because that is exactly what the Leafs need right now. And, you know, Chris Tanev, obviously, he's kind of an older guy. and you worry about his durability. But I think that you're solving two issues with one here, because if you trade for him, you're also putting Brody lower in the lineup. And I think that's something that this Leafs defensive core desperately needs. So if you acquire Chris Tanev, you can play Tanev and Riley as your top pair, and you can use them as your primary, you know, pairing to play against opposing players, star players, whoever you end up playing in the playoffs. And then that way you can leave Brody McCabe as your second shutdown pairing, and you can kind of diminish those minutes a little bit and use them against mid-level competition and use them to a lesser extent where you know they'll succeed. Because if you remember last year, Brody and McCabe were their shutdown, their top to shutdown pairing for much of the playoffs. And while they started off really strong, they also were playing way too much towards the end of the playoffs. And it's just not something that's sustainable. So, you know, Tanev, he's right-handed. He's physical player. He's blocked shots. You know, he's the exact kind of guy that they need on their top pairing. And if it's not going to cost the Kings ransom to get him, I'd make that deal, because it doesn't sound like they're going to make more than one deal this year. We might as well move on to something a little bolder, if you want to use that word. Peter, we're moving towards the deadline, as I said 400 times already.
Are we?
Are we? I don't know. Deadline might, I don't know. Might be coming up soon. Give me a bold move. Give me something that's kind of maybe not the average person won't look at and be like, oh, I've heard that before. Give me something a little off the map here.
So I guess the Jacob Chychrun rumors aren't in play, right?
I could, because Jacob Chychrun is not a guy I think anyone expected to be traded this year. Mm-hmm. And who knows, maybe those rumors are still just rumors, but if you want to use them, by all means, it's your call.
I was just looking at, you know, Forbes had like two really good trade targets piece from like Maple Leaf scouts at games or representatives at games. And one of them was the Senators and Canadians. I, for one, would like to see Matthew Joseph. If they're able to try and pull the trigger on a move for that, I think that could be a big addition given the speed that he has. And he's having a really, really strong season this year. And I guess the Ottawa Senators really haven't been that great, but, you know, 23 points in 36 games. It's nothing to sneer at. It's nothing to just be like, oh yeah, whatever. He's got the speed. He's got the ability to finish. I mean, there were games this year where he was just blown by the Maple Leafs defense, and even on other occasions too. Like, he's got that, you know, I was just going to say the killer mentality, the killer instinct, where he's able to be aggressive on the forecheck. I think that's a player that can definitely benefit a move or a change of scenery. Definitely, he is, I believe, a right wing. So definitely plays into the factor that, are you going to play him on his off wing, on a strong side? I would be interested to see how that's going to play out. But he's one name that I would love to see the Maple Leafs try and bring in.
I think that this name would be brought up a lot more frequently if this guy wasn't making the money he is, and if there weren't teams that are probably willing to part with more assets than Leafs would be. But man, I look at this trade bait board. I can't think of many more players that would fit the Leafs at the deadline better than Adam Henrique. You know, I think that just like I mentioned earlier, the Leafs third line has kind of had an identity crisis this year. They haven't really had a good mix of players. They haven't really been a line that Sheldon Keefe's been able to trust. I think that if you somehow, and I'm not going to do the math here. This is Brandon Pridham's job. If the Leafs wanted to make this move, they've done it in the past. Get a broker, get someone to retain some of the salary for the rest of the year, pay that extra fifth round pick, whatever. Just do what you got to do to make the money work. So I'm not going to touch on the actual value of the contract anymore, but if you were to bring Adam Henrique in, and for those wondering, he's making $5.8 million this year. So obviously little much, that trade wouldn't happen without some salary retention, but again, not our job to figure that out. So
too much math.
Yeah, exactly. I think that if you brought a guy like him in, you could move Max Domi up to the second line with Marner. Could be with Marner, or it could be the first line with Matthews and Marner. I was kind of thinking Domi, Marner, Tavares for a second line, but who am I kidding? We're going to be seeing Matthews and Marner together for the rest of the year. So fine. Max Domi, Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, first line. Matthew Nyes, John Tavares, William Nylander, second line. Then I think you could bump Tyler Bertuzzi, who's had some good underlying defensive numbers, down to the third line. You put Adam Henrique in the middle and have Kelly Yarncroke on the right. And I think that's your shutdown line. And then from there, you can either, you know, you can either put David Kampf with a couple of offensive wingers and Pontus Holmberg and Nick Robertson, or give Ryan Reeves a shift in there every now and then. But I don't know. Like I said, we're just throwing out names here. I don't know how the Leafs would make any of that work. But Adam Henrique, I mean, you got a veteran guy there who's good defensively. He's chipping in offensively as well. A team loading up for a playoff run, they trade for guys like Adam Henrique. So if there was a world where the money could be worth it there, I would vouch for it, but I don't see that being a possibility. So I guess that's why we're calling this bold moves. So I guess we'll finish off with a couple of just quick hits on, you know, in hindsight, it would have been better to do these three first and then do the deadline talk, but that's not the way that I ordered it. So that this is just the way we're going to do it. If you have a problem, I'm sorry, send us an email. We'll figure it out. We'll get back to you. But we're going to move on to some more mid-season quote-unquote awards, I guess, if you want to call it that. We're going to do this kind of in quick hit form. But, Peter, biggest surprise on the
year. Sorry. Oh. Kuzmenko has signed off on his no-trade clause to accept the deal to Calgary. So
okay,
the deal is going in place. That was from Pierre LeBrun and Frank Cervelli saying a lot of moving parts, but report is Lindholm is a member of the Canucks.
Dude, Elias Lindholm, I'm pretty sure, is representing Calgary at the All-Star game.
It's the John Scott thing all over again.
He's in the air on the way to Toronto. He's literally
flying to Toronto right now.
To represent the Flames.
Okay. How's that going to work out?
Didn't something like that happen last year with, who was it? Was it Bo Horvat? Wasn't he like representing
That's a better recent example because he was good to represent the Islanders, right? Or should have represented the Islanders.
Yeah, he should have, but I don't know. Weird situation. So thanks for the update there, Peter. Who was your biggest surprise on the Leafs this year so far?
Oh, this is probably going to be an easy one, and I think you're going to be in agreement with me. It's Simon Benoit.
Yes, coming, sir. I am
coming in as, you know, depth defenseman signing, like signed in August, coming in, gets sent down to the minors. All these injuries happen. And this is a guy that just basically works his ass off every single time. Like you see it in the play, you see it with the defense on the defensive side of things, blocking shots, being physical, mixing it up every now and then, showing that physical side. And he had a great, like Luke Gazzik was interviewing him earlier today for his podcast. And he basically said that if you have that rough and tumble attitude, that mentality, that team work ethic of laying everything out of the line, people are going to respect you. And Benoit was basically saying, yeah, you know, it's great to get that recognition. You know, he just does what he can. It's the little things that usually stand out, and Benoit excels in that big time. Even like he has a very underrated aspect. When I was writing about how he was one of the top free agent signings for the Leafs back in December, he had like good underlying numbers, scoring chances, expected goals for. Probably took a bit of a hit now, but if you were to tell me that he would be like one of your top four defensemen, I probably would not agree or just laugh in your face. But I've really been impressed with Benoit's game. I think the Maple Leafs should sign him. This guy is going to be a keeper. And I think one representative from the Anaheim Ducks said, when the Maple Leafs signed him, they're going to love him. Everyone's going to fall in love with him. And when he got that belt where he's just like, I may not be able to score goals, but he's able to score from his own end on that empty netter. Yeah. May not be able to score goals, but I could punch people in the face. That's what you're lacking. You're lacking character, and he has that.
Yeah, normally I would come up with a guy here so we're not agreeing on the same page. But I mean, who else has been a bigger surprise than Benoit, just considering what he was supposed to be? I remember there being a lot of like kind of sneering at the signing when it happened because, you know, all the Jay Fresh charts were coming out and he had a lot of red on there and had horrible numbers in Anaheim and just terrible, terrible numbers.
Didn't even have a good preseason too.
No, and he wasn't great in preseason, but he was also injured for a lot of it. But either way, you know, he comes into the lineup and he all of a sudden goes from, okay, depth defenseman sitting in while they've got all these guys injured. He's looking okay right now. He's holding the fort down to, okay, this guy's pretty good. He can log some penalty kill minutes. He's, you know, can play physically. And now it's a point where how do you take him out of the lineup for the playoffs? I mean, we talk about the Leafs needing the playoffs and it's exactly what he brings. So you know, for all the bad that Brad Treliving did this offseason, he did, that was a very good signing, the one of Simon Benoit. So hopefully the fact that he's an RFA plays into their favor this year and they can bring him back on a cheap deal. Peter,
what really sold me, that game against the LA Kings where he was like manhandling two guys.
Yep.
That reminded me of the Dustin Byfuglien playoff game. Obviously not as intense because Byfuglien was like literally like dragging those two guys. But that reminded me of what, of that instance when Benoit was just basically holding off those two guys. And I'm like,
yep. Picture perfect.
Legit.
So I guess, Peter, I have an idea of what who you're going to say for this. I'm probably going to end up agreeing with you again. Biggest disappointment on the year so far.
See, I'm going to go a different route, actually. I am going to say Mitch Marner. I'm going to say Mitch Marner because, I mean, we've talked about this before. Last season, the season before, like, he gets off the slow starts. But this season, it just seems like when William Nylander was elevating his play, Mitch Marner was not at that level. Like, he was trying to overthink things. And I think that's what's been his downfall this season. When he's simplifying things and just doing his thing, he's among the best. But this season, you're seeing a lot of stretches where he's great, a lot of stretches where he's inconsistent, making turnovers, making costly plays. That needs to stop. Like, that's not the Mitch Marner we know. That's not the guy who's one of the top wingers in this league. He's very creative. Like, there's no doubt about that. But some of his decision with the puck, his decision-making with the puck this season has not been where it needs to be. And it's, if you're, like, going based on, like, all the core four, I would have Mitch Marner as let's say core five. I would probably have Mitch in that four or five spot amongst the core five. So I've been disappointed with his play. I thought I would have expected a little bit more intensity, a little bit more drive. Just not seeing that.
Fair enough. I mean, I think it's definitely, you know, I think by this point last year, he had really started to heat up, and he's been better as of late, I'd say, but it's still not really 11 million dollar better. So I know what you mean. I feel bad saying this because he's kind of been the star of the show for the past couple games, but biggest disappointment so far has been Ilya Samsonov. I'm sorry, Sammy. I love you.
The larger
sample. I really hope you can prove the fan base wrong and we can put this whole Samsonov's wash debate to bed. But, you know, he came into this year supposed to be their number one goalie, and he put up some of the worst numbers in the league until he came back up from the Marlies. So not great. You want more out of him. I'm not going to say too much more about it because he started to pick it up again lately, and I don't want to shit on the guy when he's finally started to play some good hockey. Mm-hmm. So we'll close it out on this one, Peter. Who needs a big second half? And I feel like, again, I probably know the answer here.
See, I'm probably going to throw you a curveball. As much as I want to say Mitch Marner, and I kind of rotate this. I probably should have agreed with you with Samsonov because, yeah, he has been great as of late, but the larger sample still sticks out. But if the Maple Leafs have any chance of making a deep run, and let's say Joseph Woll isn't quite as well as he was to start the season, and he comes back and he's struggling a little bit, you're going to need big games and big saves from Ilya Samsonov. So he's a player that really needs to continue to step it up, but have that big impact like he did in the playoffs last season. Like he's doing right now. Like, we're seeing the Ilya Samsonov of the past that, like, took an opportunity and rolled with it. He's having that opportunity right now, and he needs to continue rolling with it, and he needs to continue to make those saves that he needs to, because in all three of those games, he's made, like, at least three or four 10-bell saves. Like, absolute monster saves. Like, there was that triple, like, foot save against Seattle. There was another big-time save in the Winnipeg Jets games in both at the home and home. I really think he needs to continue to have a big, strong second half and continue building on this momentum.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that. I pretty much just said the exact same talking points you did, except for a different reason. So it's exactly right though. I mean, he was supposed to be their number one goalie this year. I know that Joseph Woll has shown signs of being a kind of a calm and cool and collected guy they can rely on in the playoffs. But, you know, Samsonov is the guy that got him out of the first round last year, and he's going to have those expectations on him. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go for what I believe is a little low-hanging fruit here. I'm going to say Tyler Bertuzzi. And it's not entirely his fault. He's had some bad luck. He's been solid defensively, his underlying numbers would say, but he needs to score that goal. He needs to get that monkey off his back and get back into a rhythm again. And you know what? I think that if Bertuzzi finishes the season strong, just like he did in Boston last year, you know, I'm going to, if this guy shows up in the second half of the season and the playoffs, but doesn't in the first half of the regular season, I'll be able to forgive that a lot easier. So yeah. I think that, you know, whether he's in he gets moved back to the top line, or he's a guy that they end up using in the middle six or the third line or wherever. I still think this is a guy that can be valuable towards the playoffs. And I think it's up to him. If he shows up, then I think he's a guy that, you know, you could see being a fit in Toronto long-term, but hard to justify anything past this season with what we've seen so far, whether there's been bad luck or not. So I'd love to see Bertuzzi kind of rebound and be that second half guy this year. And I think he's capable of it. We'll have to see though. Mm-hmm. All right, Peter. Well, we have limped our way through the episode without our King Andrew Forbes, our King host. I think we did an okay job, and I think we did fine. Yeah. Fine. Maybe. Yeah. Let's call it that.
Before we continue, I just got to give a little comment here from Big Willie Styles. Need Tavares to finish in the second half. He's had chances, just been snake bit.
Can't agree more, Billy. Big 100%. Yeah. Tavares didn't even cross my mind, probably just because I'm so used to him being that consistent guy that's always kind of just doing exactly in just enough to avoid criticism. But yeah, he's definitely a guy that they need to finish in the second half. This is the guy who scored 36 goals last year. So, Peter, anything to look forward to? Anything you want to plug before we log off here?
No, it's just, you know, All-Star Weekend's kicking in right now. So there's that. As you mentioned, just gearing up for, you know, the big events after, you know, Super Bowl, but also the second half of the season. You know, this is now when the grind begins.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, in that case, we'll leave it here. Thank you for joining us. If you did at all throughout this episode, once again, don't forget to follow Sticks in the Six on social media. You can follow myself at A Hobson Media. You can follow Peter at P Baracchini, or you can follow Andrew on Twitter. And this is all on Twitter, by the way, Andrew G Forbes, or you can follow the podcast. That's STIXINTHE6IX. That's Sticks in the Six Pod on the end of that. I forgot the pod part. Damn it. I almost did it.
Don't worry. You caught it.
Yeah. If you type Sticks in the Six on Twitter, you'll find us. There's not that many accounts called Sticks in the Six out there. So we'll leave it at that. Peter, thanks for taking the time to sit down tonight.
Likewise.
We'll be back next time with another episode of Sticks in the Six once we're back at full strength here. So thank you very much and have yourselves a great night.